You ever got scammed?
Yes. It was actually this 70-year-old guy from Florida. The guy seemed legit. He knew everything about cars. He knew colors. He knew options. Like, him and I could speak about cars for days. So the guy goes to me, hey, I secured 3 cars, and if I can make a few bucks on them, I don't mind selling them to you. And he tells me he's got a GT3 PDK, he's got a Turbo S, and he's got a Ferrari 488 Pista. I wired him $1 million. I noticed that there were liens populated. He never owned the cars. He never put any money down. The case was he clearly scammed me.
And today's guest, we got Adam from Brooklyn Auto Sales. Thank you. We met you through a mutual friend, Paul. He used to work at Auto Trader at that time, right?
So he actually worked for cars.com.
Okay, okay.
And Paul is actually one of the very few people that has seen the growth of my business from day one. I remember him walking into my dealership at the time. It was a really small outdoor Brooklyn joint. Looked like a traditional rinky-dinky car dealership. And Paul walked in to introduce himself as my new rep and, you know, just kind of touch base. And at the time, I had had an R33 GTR sitting there. And he started asking me a bunch of questions, and turns out to be that he was a car guy. You know, reps normally aren't car people. And it was super, like, surprising to see that he knew so much about cars and saw that I was so interested in cars, and actually invited me to a event with you guys. I think it might have been Fall Nationals, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, yeah. Englishtown.
In Englishtown at the time.
That was a long time ago.
R.I.P.
Yeah.
I actually happen to still own that R33 GTR.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
The special car.
Yeah, yeah. So Paul's seen it from day one till this very point. And it's kind of only going up from here.
What do you consider Brooklyn Auto Sales as far as, like, the type of cars you sell, and the different clientele that you have? You're not your traditional used car dealer.
No, definitely not.
Far from it.
Yeah, definitely far from it. I try to curate and buy and sell cars that I would personally own. Everything is hand-picked. Nothing is, like, auction bought or anything like that. It's through people in the car scene. It's through word of mouth. It's through recommendations, through brokers who deal with specialty vehicles. The goal for me is not to make the most amount of money, but to get the best and highest quality cars, whether it be the best Toyota Supra on the market or the best Lamborghini on the market or the best Porsche on the market, in all different aspects and variations, colors and trims and all types of stuff. Boutique-like dealership is what I like to call it, and it's what it's evolved into. The vision was always there. The capital wasn't.
So that's what you envisioned, and that's what you're growing into, and you are now. But take us back to, like, how did you get into cars?
Well, let's go, like, a step behind that. I was always into selling things. So back in, like, junior high school, I was selling cell phones. I was buying, like, used cell phones.
Nextels.
I was putting light up antennas and light up batteries, and then I was trading them. I was selling them back to cell phone stores. I was selling them to individuals. And then that kind of escalated into selling sneakers during high school. And it wasn't like a full-time sneaker reselling thing. It was like, if I found a pair of sneakers that I liked, I'd buy a pair to wear and I'd buy a pair to sell. And then my father was in the repair shop business for a while. Not super savvy with selling. And when I came in, eBay Motors was, like, happening in 03, 04. That's when it, like, was popping. And I said, Dad, you mind if I list a car for sale for you, like, on eBay, just to see? Because I was selling sneakers at the time on eBay. And he said, sure. So the first car that I ever sold happens to be a 2000 Honda Civic SI.
What color?
It was blue.
Okay, electron blue.
Electron blue.
Yep. And it was actually a theft recovery, fully gutted, rolling shell, that he at the time paid $650 for.
Wow.
And I think I sold it for $1,200. On eBay, it was like a no reserve auction. The guy drove in with a trailer from, like, Michigan, loaded the thing up and drove it home. And I didn't ask my dad for a dollar. It just, like, watching how impressed he was because it was like a whole nother chapter to the business now, right? Like virtual sales, meeting people from all different states to, you know, come and buy a car from you all the way in New York or wherever, you know, wherever you are. And, you know, one car led to two, two led to five. And, you know, before you knew it, I was on my own and selling cars on the regular. You know, I kind of had to make my mother happy. I continued to go to college, but that didn't work out too well. And, you know.
So you are the founder of Brooklyn Auto Sales.
I am, yes.
Okay.
And back then it was more of a traditional used car sales
lot.
It was a used car lot,
right? Like going back, and this might sound crazy, but I'm 34 today, and going back 20 years to when I started, I was 15, 16 years old. There weren't any like boutique-like dealership. It wasn't like a common thing, mm-hmm. right? So I did get familiar with the used car industry at a traditional used car lot with the signs and the banners and the flags. And after, I don't know, I want to say 7-8 years, I realized that I didn't need to be on a main street anymore. I didn't need to waste a lot of time with walk buyers who didn't even know what they were looking at, right? And I kind of wanted to go in the direction of dealing with educated buyers who knew what they were looking for. And the only way to do that was to kind of come off the grid, get a building, store my cars inside, and sell them that way to people that I wanted to deal with.
So let's get into, so by nature, you are a salesman.
Correct.
Where does the love for cars come into play as part of what you just explained?
So it was a lot of video games. I used to play a lot of Gran Turismo. I played a lot of Forza simulators, been to a few like races and street race events and, you know, like local car shows before they were called like Cars and Coffee. It was like in a parking lot at night. And just, I really do love cars, and that's the direction I wanted to take in life.
What was your first car?
The first car I bought for myself was a Range Rover. It was a 2003 Range Rover.
4.0 or the 4.6?
It was a 4.6 at the time. The first, like, you know, cool car that I bought myself, where I could afford myself, was my R34 GTR.
So that was the first one?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought that was one. I thought you were already deep into a collection by then.
You know, it's funny you say that, because I never thought or expected that I'd ever own that car, and to have it being one of my first, coincidentally, is, you know, I feel blessed. But yeah.
Now, you know, we keep saying Arthur, it's a special edition.
Yes. So I own two now, and they're both really amazing cars.
Same color?
No, one's black and one's lightning yellow.
But let's go back to the before. So how we met. So I remember meeting you at Englishtown. We had our booth set up, and then I remember Paul coming by and say, "Hey, I got these guys. They're coming from New York. They got a car dealer. He's gonna bring us a Skyline. It's gonna be cool." I'm like, "Oh yeah, cool." Like, we got a spot ready for him. So I remember you pulled up, and then you're showing us everything. So that car, explain to the people. That was a very special car at the time.
Absolutely.
Still is now. It's a legendary car. It was a R33 Tommy Carrera.
Tommy Carrera R33 GTR.
Yeah.
Legit. It was a Motorex car.
Right.
One
of the last
fully
ones.
Bond released and grandfathered in. It was, you know, it still is a really cool car. It was the only one in the States at the time, and I believe there's been two or three since.
Yeah, and you still have that car.
I still have that car, yep.
And I remember, it's funny, that day, because after looking at that car, another friend of mine was like, "Oh, you know, this kid is selling an R33 like right now." I'm like, "No way." And then sure enough, I hit him up. And then I told you, I said, "I'm going to go buy R33 today." You're like, "Where?" I said, "I don't know. I'm going to find out later." And I did. I bought an R33 that day.
Oh, he did. He did.
Random. Because I saw you from
Pro BMX
biker, Scotty Kramer.
Oh, wow.
So he had one that he listed.
Yeah.
It was ugly.
Where was it listed?
It was on Facebook.
No, but where in New York?
No, it was in Jersey.
In Jersey.
Because yeah, Scotty at the time, he lived in South Jersey.
He's by the shore.
Got it.
So friends of friends was like, oh, I think Scotty's selling it. I was like, nah, ain't no way. And sure enough, he was selling it. And I'm like, that night when we left the event, we unpacked the trailer and I went to his house and I bought that car.
That's sick.
And it was just crazy. I'm like, man, if I didn't meet Adam, that I wouldn't be buying a Skyline.
Yeah, dude.
But this guy, I swear, he
changes his cars like he changes underwear.
But I was just like, oh man, this is...
Dude, that was over 10 years ago. Do you believe that?
Well over. And it's funny because I bought it and it was the ugliest. It was orange like this, but it was like faded. And I'm like, who painted this car? He's like, I don't know. Yeah, that's why I'm selling it. I'm like, all right, I'll rock this car. It wasn't a GTR, it was a GTST. But I mean, I think there was a 95, if I'm not mistaken. Drove smooth. I changed all the fluids in it. I mean, I didn't have no problems with the car.
Yeah, it didn't last with you, though.
No, it didn't. But it was still cool. But like I said, if it wasn't because I met Adam that day when I looked at this car, I'm like, damn, this is a nice car. I need to get one.
So how did you get the car?
The R33 was actually listed on Craigslist. That one actually is owned by my brother. My brother's my partner in Brooklyn Auto Sales. And I own the 34, and then he bought a 33. So that 33 belongs to him, but we kind of like, you know, share cars.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, because cool.
you rolled up with your brother to that event.
Yeah, he used to come everywhere with me. And so the car was listed on Facebook. No, not Facebook, Craigslist. And at the time had a blown motor. The owner happened to be from California, but shipped the car down to a shop in Jersey to have it fixed.
Akuma?
No, the guy in California, I forget his name, but
what it shop went in to a Jersey? Shop,
Pride.
Oh, Pride Motorsports.
Yeah.
All right.
And
Nazir.
Yeah. Over at Pride. And then for whatever reason, he chose not to fix it and ended up selling it to us.
Nice.
So we put the motor in it. It's a stock RB26. But yeah, super, super cool car for sure.
So then from then on, I just remember, like, you know, we started following each other and you kind of blew up. And the next thing you know, it wasn't, obviously the Skyline market at that time wasn't too crazy. It was crazy, but not like there wasn't a lot of inventory. And then you moved over to the Supras.
Yep.
And for a while, it almost seemed like you were collecting them. So tell us about like what made you dive into the Supras and for... Even I think up to now, like you still have some nice, you've sold a lot of nice Supras.
Right.
And they all seem to, at one point or the other, like go through Brooklyn Auto Sales before, you know, it reaches final destination.
During my growth, I feel like I did everything in phases. And I wasn't, like, as much as I love the Skylines and the GTRs, that wasn't the market that I was trying to cater to just because there weren't many of those cars available.
Yeah.
And also, they weren't as common or legal.
Right.
Right.
You're always fighting a little battle.
So whoever knows a story about what's happened in the past with those cars knows.
The Skyline.
The Skylines, yes.
Yep.
So for me is, I started with a lot of Evos, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
I did a lot of Evo 9s. And I went through a phase of Evo 9s. Like I was buying every 2006 Evo 9 that I can find. And I went through them. And I kind of like mastered that market in my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And then shifted over to the Supras. Which, I mean, I think the cheapest Supra I've ever bought was like $11,000 or $12,000.
And it's kind of crazy too, because obviously in the last couple of years, Supra market kind of went crazy. And you were definitely ahead of it. So it's kind of like, man, I know sometimes you probably look back and was like, damn, if I only kept that one, like, you know, we just saw the highest number, whatever, on Bring a Trailer or whatever.
100%. I mean, like, and that, you know? and that's kind of the problem of being a car guy in the car business.
Yeah.
You kind of get this attachment and the sentimental value and some of like fear of missing out if you mm-hmm. sell it too cheap or whatever the case is. But the truth is I've made a lot of great relationships. I've sold a ton of Supras. It was my car of choice to sell.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't sell it because it made me X amount of dollars. I tried to, you know, buy and sell as many as I could because I did like the car and they were all different and modified, unmodified, manual, non-manual, turbo, non-turbo. They all got treated the same. And I got so far into it that like, you know, there was a time where I think there was a year where I've traded 55 Supras.
Wow.
I've built a ton of relationships with not only buyers and sellers of the cars, but, you know, people all over the country who would work to find these cars for me and would get a finder's fee in return. And I've bought some really special ones that I kept, and I've sold a bunch of really nice ones.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them come back to me, and some kind of disappeared and never showed up again.
You mentioned from Mitsubishi to Supra. What made you kind of do that transition over?
A lot of it was capital. I mean, you know, when you have, especially that young, I was, I think, 22, 23 years old, five or six of the same unit, it's like, you know, 20,000 times 10 at the time was $100,000 in just Evos. And then if I had to buy Supras at, you know, 30,000, 40,000 average, I mean, you know, I needed the money capital to do that, right?
So it's kind of cool because you said, like, you had phases. It's like you weren't also selling stock cars. You were selling a lot of modified cars.
I was.
Which is very untraditional in, like, that used car market because everyone doesn't, maybe they don't want it or they don't know about, like, especially some of the mods that you did. So I think for you, that was kind of cool. You learned the process. You learned the parts. Like, you know, you could say, like, this is the reason why this car is, you know, I want this much money for it because transmission in it alone is $5,000. You know what I mean? Stuff like that, which I think was very different from what you were doing, because you were actually not like someone that built a car, all right, I'm going to sell it. You were actually, you know, housing, like stocking these cars for sale that were modified, that made, you know, more power than, you know, factory and all that kind of stuff, which I think also set you apart from, you know, the regular car dealership.
Yeah, no, I definitely, I'm with you on that. I like to connect with the sellers of the cars. I would ask so much information, and I would ask for who tuned the cars, who built the cars, when was it done, and how was it done. And with all that information and data, I was able to, you know, help the sale of the car.
Right.
A big plus was offering financing and trade-ins, right? So say you had your Skyline and you dumped a ton of money into it and you decided to sell it, it'd probably be a lot harder for you to sell it because you probably wouldn't want to trade and you probably can't offer financing.
Yeah.
So I wanted to kind of be the guy that offered that and, you know, kind of targeted that market.
Yeah, I think you also helped even, I know a lot of people that you kind of helped broker the sale for people so that they can get financing for the sell on the buyer's end, and then the seller is still able to get his car gone.
Absolutely.
Like, you know what I mean? I think that also helped you out, you know, to help your business expand, because now you're offering other services that traditional, you know, just a regular seller off the street couldn't do.
Right.
Do you still do that model?
The brokering?
Brokering?
I would. Yeah, I still do it for a small fee or whatever the case is. But I do it more for people that I'm familiar with. There's a lot of craziness that goes on in the car business, and I try to keep all my deals clean.
Yeah, I know. I hit you up last year when I saw a nice car and I didn't know nothing. And then I hit you up. You're like, give me the VIN. And you're like, you sent me the Carfax. I was like, fuck, man, I didn't know. And you're
like, there's a lot of shady shit that goes on. Yeah.
And we're going to get into that. We're going to get into some shady shit. real quick. And we didn't cover this. What was the first car that you sold?
It was the Honda Civic SI.
Okay.
Yeah, but I sold it on eBay.
But that was prior to the dealer.
Like, yeah, so like when you moved into your new location, what was the first car there?
It's hard to say. I think one of my first cars that I've ever sold that kind of stands out to me was an E39 M5.
Let's go back to the Supras. I know one time when I was just talking to you, you picked up the lowest mileage Supra.
As far as I know, it's still the lowest mileage exposed Supra. The factory 97. Turbo 6-speed, black on tan gold package car.
And you still have that?
I still have that car. It sits under the wrapper. It's got 2,900 miles. I've been offered a lot of money, but I refuse to get rid of it.
So that one's definitely still has a not for sale sticker on it.
It still has a not for sale sticker. It's kind of like my holy grail. It's like my success in the super world. That's my reward.
How'd you find that one?
So I was actually sitting at home one day on a Saturday, I'll never forget. It was like, I think November. And my phone just starts going off. Just text message after text message after text message. I'm like, what the fuck? And I open it up, and one of the guys that I pay to like find me cars or whatever the case is, kept sending me the eBay link. and this car was displayed on like a beautifully trimmed lawn somewhere in Arizona. It looked like a scam. It looked like a fake listing, right? And the car was listed for $83,500 on eBay. And at the time, it was a lot of money.
It was.
At the time, in 2017.
I was going to say it.
Or 16. 16 or 17. There was only like a handful of guys that would spend six figures on a Supra.
Mm-hmm. And this was stock one, too.
Fully bone stock, original owner, the whole nine. And I was like, you know what? I can't really lose. Whether this is a real deal or it's not a real deal, if I really do buy it or I don't buy it, I can't lose. It's on eBay. I hit buy it now. The car was listed for exactly 6 minutes before it got taken down because I hit buy it now.
Oh, shit.
So I shot the guy a message. I said, hey, I just won your Supra. Please give me a call when you can. I'd like to finalize the deal. And I'm just like waiting by my phone, waiting.
You must have been nervous.
I was so nervous, dude. And I had a wedding later that night. And I get a phone call from Arizona. And it was an older gentleman who called me up. And he said, hey, I think you won my Supra and yada, yada, yada. And I said, okay, great. And it was pretty interesting because he had told me that someone had offered $100,000 for the car via email. If he can cancel my deal and take theirs. I said, well, you have my word. I'm buying the car. I'll get you wired on Monday. And we'll figure out the rest. So Monday came around and I wired him his money. And, you know, after talking to him for a little bit, he sounded like a super interesting guy, which he was. And I said, you know what? I think I want to come over there and meet you. And I want to see the car in person. I'm not backing out, but I'd like to make a trip out of it. And he happened to be into cars heavy. He had probably a 50 to 60 car collection.
Wow.
In three different locations. He was actually big into Time Attack for a little bit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Super interesting story. He actually built a full-blown facility for Time Attack. He hired some of the best people in the industry from Cosworth, from Honda, from Mitsubishi to work on his Evo that he, you know, had built.
Racing.
I think he won two championships with the car.
Oh, wow.
Like,
he's legit.
Straight off the trailer type, like, you know, coming into competition with companies that have been doing this for 10, 15 years, he just came in and took first place twice.
Wow.
So it was pretty interesting to meet him as well. And I'm super, super happy to own that car.
So what happened with the, he was offered 100,000 and you came in at 83.
Well, he was a handshake guy, and it's very hard to come by today.
That's good.
Right? Like, anyone would kind of pull out and cancel a deal for a few extra bucks. Right. But he's
like, oh, you want it?
He had it's principle, yours. And he had value, and I respect him for that.
You still keep in touch with him?
I haven't touched base with him in a while. He was, at the time, 76 years old, and it just seemed like a bittersweet moment for him as he was selling his collection off.
Oh, he was selling...
Yeah.
He sold all the cars.
Yeah. And not to sound like stereotypical, but he was a 76-year-old white man who owned a Supra. And
he never even drove.
I asked him bluntly. I said, dude, like, why that car? Like, you're just not of this era. I just want to know why.
Yeah.
And he goes, well, I'm going to be honest with you. He was in the tech world. And he goes, one of my employees needed a car. So we went over to the Toyota dealership and I got him a Corolla or a Tacoma. And I saw this beautiful Toyota Supra. And I tell the sales guy, hey, what is that car and how much is that car? And they went back and forth and he goes, add it to my tab. I'd like to buy it. And that was it. He bought the car.
He just never even thought about it, probably.
I think it was $43,000 at the time.
That's wild.
Yeah.
So he doubled his money. Yeah. He was happy.
Yeah.
That was a good investment on his part. So back to your cars now. Whether it's personal or, you know, in the collection that's not for sale, but maybe for sale, what's besides that car, what other car sticks, like, pops into your head for yourself?
So obviously my R34 GTRs are my holy grail, my favorite car ever made.
We'll never sell that car.
I will never sell that car, no.
All right, so it's known. We can't buy that car.
It's not for sale. Look, I'm not going to sit here and lie to you. The Supra... The low mile Supra, I think there will come a point in my life, Maybe not now, maybe not in 10 years from now, but maybe in 20, 30 years.
And maybe when you're 76.
I may have to break ways with it, but I think the R34 is going to die with me.
Watching Brooklyn Auto Sales expand to where it's at. To me now, it seems like you're, like you said, a boutique. You're like the hype beast of cars. You know what I mean? Like, it seems like whenever I see a post from you, it's not some Acura TSX or, you know,
it's not a
regular regular BMW 335 or something like that. It's if it's a BMW, it's an M. You know, if it's a Benz, it's an AMG. Like, it's always the top of the line of whatever model that was. How do you find your specs? Because to say like you're the hype beast, yeah, dealers sell M3s, but you got the M3 individual, red interior, this. It's always a step above. So you don't have to tell you all your secrets, but, you know, like, you definitely curate a very fine collection, which is not something that, you know, the regular buyer is going to be like, oh, I'm going to go to the dealer and see what they got, because it's, like, very specific.
Of course. So I'd like to thank some of my team, whether they work in the office or outside the office, that helped me find what I'm looking for. But me and my brother kind of set the parameters for that, in the sense of, like, you know, if it's an M3 or a GT3, we got to have it with certain options like the seats and the ceramics and so on and so on. And, you know, obviously special colors a plus. But we do full-time hunting. It's literally full-time hunting. And as soon as we see a car that we like, or hear about a car that we like, or even like scroll through Instagram and the car might not even be for sale, just shoot the guy a DM and say, hey, when you're ready to sell, I'd love the opportunity to buy this car.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's gotten us this far. So a lot of referrals, a lot of, I don't really make it to car meets that much, but when I do, I pop out, I introduce myself to people. And I'd say, yes, I am the hype beast of cars in certain platforms. But at the same time, I don't act as that arrogant, exclusive guy who, you know, doesn't want to speak to you. Like, I'll come over, I'll introduce myself. And if you have a nice car, I tell you I'd love to buy it one day. And, you know, that's how I kind of do it.
Yeah.
How do you keep up with, like, the trends of, like, what people are looking for in cars?
It's kind of just like being in the community, seeing all the changes in the car world, seeing what the younger generation is into, because that's what keeps you relevant.
So, like, right now, what is the, for us, you know, we're on the older side, the younger what's the younger generation into? So, like, from 20 to 30.
So I'm seeing a lot of, like, you know, starting at the lowest point of an M340 to an M3 to GTRs to Lamborghinis, Porsches, and so on.
Wow. I remember being 20 and wanted a Supra. These kids are buying Lamborghinis now these days.
Crazy. It's nuts.
You got a lot of repeat customers too.
I mean, a lot of repeat customers. A lot of customers that have evolved with me.
Yeah.
A lot of the guys that have bought Evos for me that are now driving R8s and Huracans or GT3s and Turbo S's.
And what's great about that is you're like, when you're done with it, just sell it back to me.
Absolutely.
And I'll put you in another car.
As long as it's a good car and a, you know, customer
took
care of it. I love recycling my cars. It's probably the best thing I can do.
You mentioned, you know, before when you got into Mitsubishis and you were buying modded cars, didn't you have to worry about, like, the reliability and making sure that what you're selling has that? Because, you know, there's a lot of cars out there that are modded, but they were built like shit and sometimes they blow up. Like, you know, did you worry about that? And, like, what did you do to...
So I definitely worried about that. And it's a great question because... Look, everything in business is a learning process, especially when it's your own business, right? And I've learned that, you know, take, for example, a Evo and a Subaru. And no offense to any of the Subaru guys, but I won't sell a Subaru anymore because of reliability issues, right? there has been incidents, and no car is perfect, but you try to do the best you can. You know, if I sell a car and it's an Evo, we do compression tests, leak down tests. We make sure that the car is fit before it's sold. If I see the guy thrashing on it on Instagram and doing crazy things, I mean, hey, it's on you. You bought a modified car. You could have easily bought a stock GTR, modified it with the wrong person or did something wrong and user error and blown it up straight out of the dealership, right? That's the truth.
Right.
So I guess it's also how you present it too. Letting the customer know that they are buying a modified car, that, you know, they do lack some reliability in certain instances is definitely a thing to point out. But, you know, so far so good. I mean, have there been a few incidents that I've made right? Absolutely.
Do you, I guess I was going to say, do you offer warranties or anything like that?
So modified cars, they're sold as is.
As is.
But like, you got to be a human being, right? Like if you and I have an understanding, if you bought a car and you ran into an issue, I'm going to make it right.
What was one, and you don't have to be too specific, but what was one that really, like, you're like, damn, this like basically gave you a headache?
Nothing really off the top of my head. I mean, there was a Supra that actually bent a rod. It was a fully built car. And we did everything to appease the customer. He still wasn't happy. So we ended up just buying the car back. It just is what it is, man. Yeah. Some people are not understanding.
Yeah.
Well, I'm surprised you actually said, like, I got so many stories about that. It's actually good that you're saying that you don't have that many stories.
Yeah, I really don't. I don't have that many stories. I mean, they're all like the platforms that I deal with, if you look like thoroughly.
Pretty solid.
They're pretty solid. Like Evos are pretty solid. Supras are pretty solid. Porsches, Lambos, all pretty solid cars.
So being that you have so many sales, have you ever got scammed?
Yes.
And when, what was that process like? Like fake money or fake wires? Like,
So I've recently gotten scammed pretty bad. It was for $500,000.
Shit.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yep. It irks me to kind of talk about it, but we're going to get into it now because it's on the topic. It was actually this 70-year-old guy from Florida who I was introduced to by a random. I was specifically looking for a paint-to-sample GT2 RS for a client that I had lined up. The car was $350,000 at the time. This is before like prices shot up during the pandemic. And the guy seemed legit. He knew everything about cars. He knew colors. He knew options. Like him and I could speak about cars for days.
Mm.
Well, I wired him $350,000 and I got the car. I got the title. I got everything. It was all legit. And just like any start to a new relationship, it was like constant calling and texting and, hey, how are you? We kept in touch with each other. He was a true car guy. He called me up 8 months later when the 992 GT3s first came out. I had two for sale.
You had a chalk one.
So the first one I had was a yellow and a blue.
Yeah. Okay, I remember the blue one.
He called me about my yellow one. He says, hey, I really like that car. You have it listed for 305. Can we make a deal at 300,000? I'll wire you tomorrow. I said, look, man, I'm not going to argue with you over $5,000 on a $300,000 deal. We've done business before. I've made money with you. Good vibes. Let's wrap it up. Just send me 300,000. The car's yours. So he wired me 300,000, right? So 2 days later, guy calls me up. And now at this point, this is when the used car business was a rat race. And you didn't want to miss out on any opportunities, on any deals. Everything was skyrocketed,
right?
Like, to the moon. So it was like Hugo can go buy a GTR at the Nissan dealership for $110,000, and it can very much be $150,000 in 2 weeks from now.
Right.
So we didn't want to miss out on any deals. So the guy goes to me, hey, I secured three cars, and if I can make a few bucks on them, I don't mind selling them to you. He wasn't a dealer, he was an individual. So I said, what three cars do you have? So he goes off and he tells me he's got a GT3 PDK, he's got a Turbo S, and he's got a Ferrari 488 Pista. We went back and forth, and we agreed on a number. It was $1 million for all three cars. I wired him $1 million. I got two out of the three cars. I got the Pista, and I got the GT3. the Turbo S never showed up. And I said, hey, man, what's going on with the Turbo S? You were supposed to ship me 3 cars. I only have 2. And he never lied to me. Always picked up the phone, always answered. And long story short, he calls me back and he goes, hey, Adam, listen. The dealership found out that I'm selling this Turbo S and I can't afford to lose and jeopardize my relationship with them. I said, well, what about me? What about my relationship with you? I mean, you committed the car to me. I mean, I kind of don't care what happens after that.
Yeah.
He goes, look, man, I know you didn't buy the car for yourself. I know you, you know, bought the car to flip, and I want you to make money, and I'm not going to take that away from you. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to send you the money back for that car plus a profit. I said, fine, whatever, Dane. Let's just keep the ball rolling and keep it pushing. So we had written the Ferrari up for $500,000. The GT3 was $250,000. So he owed me $250,000 plus whatever profit he planned on sending me back, which I didn't expect and I didn't ask for.
Right. But he was trying to make it right.
He was trying to make it right, trying to be the good guy.
Mm-hmm.
So he sends me back $275,000, $25,000 profit. So I'm like, wow, this guy's a gentleman, right? Like
during that time, yeah.
During that time. Remember, he bought the cars on Monday and sold them to me on Tuesday.
Yeah.
So there was nowhere and no way for me to do my due diligence on like a title search to see if he actually bought these cars cash like he said he did. So a month goes by and I don't have titles. And it was very common and very normal.
Especially during that
during
time.
During COVID, like, right. Hey, Adam,
everything's
I
delayed.
Can't make it to the DMV lady can't. You know, take it to the DMV or whatever. Right? I bought this car in Texas. I bought this one in North Carolina. But he'd answer every phone call. He'd offer me more cars. And I kind of like put it on pause because I'm like, dude, like I have $750,000 with this guy. This little incident happened. I don't know what's next. 2 months go by and I'm like, hey, man, where are my titles? And he starts like babbling. And I'm like, okay. So I decided to Carfax the cars again. And when I did that, I noticed that there were liens populated.
Mm.
So what ultimately happened was...
He never owned the cars.
He never owned the cars. He never put any money down. He financed the full nut and cashed me out.
Right.
So he took $750,000 of mine and right. I have paperweight.
Yeah.
Can't do anything with the cars.
Nope.
So I try to handle it nicely. Called him up and tried to like figure out what was going on. And there were so many things that ran through my head because like in the car business, if you finance the car, the bank gives you the dealer a kickback.
Right.
The car's paid off within 2 months, 3 months, it gets charged back.
Yeah, they don't get that.
So I was saying, you know, maybe the guy has a relationship with the dealership. Maybe he's financing these cars just so the dealership could get their kickback
yeah.
or whatever the case is. Just trying to think positive, but that wasn't the case. The case was he clearly scammed me. Well, fast forward, I give all the paperwork to an attorney. You know, demand letters, the whole nine.
Yeah.
The guy's not shooken up, so clearly he's done this before. Lucky enough, he paid the Porsche off. So that was $250,000.
That you got back.
Never paid the Ferrari off.
Mm.
The guy's now dead. Apparently had pancreatic cancer and died. And from what I understand, the son was the simulator of the scams, still alive, and we're after him. We're coming for him.
And you still have, so whatever happened with the pista, like they
so I still have the pista.
Okay.
Ferrari Financial knows that I have the car. The judge ruled that I get to keep possession of the car until
they figure out what
what's going on. And that's that. It's unfortunate, but it's part of the business. And I will try my best to recoup that money.
Yeah. And you'll probably also learn from that too as well.
Oh yeah. Obviously. It's definitely an expensive lesson.
Man. You know, thank God you're able to still stay afloat, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
I began heartburn.
I'm
gonna feed my family.
It definitely hurt, man.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, that's a big nut to hold on to. And then, you know, just have a sin.
Yeah, a lot of shady people out there, for sure.
So what are the common cars that are selling right now?
So I'm doing a lot of like Porsche 911 stuff. I'm doing a lot of Lamborghini Huracan, Urus. I'm doing a lot of Audi R8s. I'm doing a lot of BMW M3s. Mainly like performance cars for me. That's what I don't really like to call myself an exotic car dealer, because that's not what I classify myself as. It's more of like a performance car dealer.
When COVID happened, people were bored and just buying cars left and right. The market was soaring. Where is it now?
So believe it or not, like in the car business, well, I think in any business, when COVID first hit, it was a big scare. No one knew what the fuck was going on.
Right.
Am I allowed to curse?
Yeah.
Curse, man.
No one knew what the fuck was going on, right? So it's like, I was like, God damn, what am I doing? Like, I had just moved into the new location, not even a year there. And then this thing comes around and shuts us down. And we had no idea what was happening. And for like 2-3 months, business was
shaky,
very shaky. But then right after that, it just boomed. It was like a blessing.
Yeah.
And it just, it was crazy. It turned into this like huge, big, big, big bubble. Like I said before, you know, a GTR that was sold for 110 could have been 150 within a matter of 2 weeks, maybe even less.
Right.
There were no cars. People were bored. People were desperate. People were making money hand over fist and just spending. The market, I think last November, took a dip. It was a scary time in the car business. A lot of changes. You know, production on many vehicles went back into effect, and dealerships were seeing cars. So, you know, the used car market kind of tanked. It went down, and now I see it kind of like ramping up again. I think the stock market has a factor in this. I think the
always
Bitcoin
the
market has a factor in this. Right now it's very steady. The market definitely corrected itself from COVID time.
Yeah.
There's a lot more cars on the market. There's more options for the buyers. It's also a buyer's market, a little more of a buyer's market with the rates being so high. Although I don't see people stopping from like a 4% rate to a 9% rate.
Yeah.
Because like the changes in the monthly payment, depending how big the loan is, could be anywhere from $20 difference or $200 difference.
Yeah.
And you know, when you're talking about $100,000, $200,000 car, what's
it's not much for them. What was the, when you had that viral moment on the news for the loud exhaust?
Yeah.
That was probably funny as hell, because I remember when you posted, I saw it before you posted. Now she's going to send it to you. And then you guys started, and then like literally within a few hours, like all my boys are sharing it. You're in it. You know, like what was the story behind that?
So truthfully, I had no idea that they were recording when they were first recording. It was this guy that walked in and I wasn't expecting it, totally off guard. A guy walks in with a camera guy right behind him, but you don't see the camera.
Mm-hmm.
Literally some sneaky ass shit.
And this was at your location in Brooklyn right?
I was in Brooklyn at the time, and I had a lineup of Supras. And the way they found me was through one of my personal cars. I still own it. It's a white Toyota Supra, and it was on the dyno, and I was the tuner was two-stepping it at the time.
Yeah.
Just shooting flames, pops and bangs, and you know, the whole shebang. And that's how they found me. And they came over and they like started asking me a bunch of questions about who modifies these cars for you? Where do you drive these cars? Is it even road legal? And I'm like, dude, like I was trolling for half the time after I found out that he was recording me.
Right.
And there was so much shit that was like left out. So he goes, where do you drive this car? I was like, yeah, I drive it in Mexico. And like, they completely cut that part out.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, what do you think about this? How can we stop this? And then like, he was literally trying to get me to like cough up who does these modifications, where can he buy these modifications. And I'm like, dude, like you're not getting any of this out of me, just get the fuck out.
But did that, so like, you know, a lot of times people say the viral videos help their business. Did you notice like an increase,
so
like calls wise at least, or maybe like emails or something?
So I'm not gonna lie to you, when that all happened, it took like a week or two before it hit the news.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no idea how they were going to portray me.
Right.
And I was fucking nervous, dude. I was like, shit, like, they're going to make me look like a bad guy for mm-hmm. selling these types of cars. Like, I was like, God damn, like, I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And when the video first came out, I was like, yo, this shit is hilarious. It's fucking funny. So I reposted it on my Instagram, and it ramped up the following like crazy. It was really, really good publicity for the people in the car scene, for the racing world, for all that. It was just like comedy. I didn't notice like a crazy increase in emails or phone calls directly from that, but I'm sure that a lot of it came from that through the years.
I every once in a while I still see it pop up.
Yeah, like, yeah. It's definitely resurfaced quite a few times.
Yeah, like it's like now like a meme for, you know, for that car market. So, and then also, when, you know, going back to that, we met during a race event, I see that you guys also have, now that you're into the Porsches and a lot of these higher horsepower cars, you guys been going to a lot of like roll racing events. How's that been for you and your business?
It's actually pretty good. A lot of my clients that have bought cars for me attend these events. Mm-hmm. We're a sponsor of the whole Race Motive event at Pocono Raceway. And I don't really make it out to many events, but when I do, it's nice for people, you know, to see the
face.
Put
a name to the face.
Put a name to the face and all that stuff. And it's fun to, you know, compete a little bit here and there.
And I think it's also good that you're able to sell, like, it's kind of like full circle, right? You were selling these, like, less horsepower Hondas, Evos, and now you're selling, you know, 2,000 horsepower cars.
Right.
You know, made, you know, some of them are built by some of the, you know, top shops in the country, Underground Racing, you know, AIM for the Porsches and stuff like that. And then now you have direct relations with these guys. I think that's
absolutely
a dream. And you know,
what's kind of nice about it too is like I come into play as not so much of a competitor, right? Because you'll see like, you know, certain companies compete against each other. And I'm not going to mention names, but like it becomes like a rivalry there. Mm-hmm. And I come into play and I'm kind of like, you know everybody there because I've sold this guy a car, he's a customer of theirs, and I sold this guy a car and he's a customer of theirs. So it's nice to just go out and see. I also go there for my, you know, self, mental, whatever, just to see what's new, what's not, what mm-hmm. people are into and what they're not, and kind of see what the, you know, what's trending.
And out of all these cars that you've sold, what would you say would be like the hardest car that you had to find for somebody?
Damn.
That's hard. Did you not find the car that somebody asked you for?
It's a hard question, man. Fuck. It's a very hard question. I'd have to, I mean, there were so many cars, there were so many special cars that I have to sit back and really think about it.
So maybe that'll be a part two.
I'll definitely brainstorm.
We'll have to do a part two with you.
So back in the, you know, back when you were selling, you know, the Mitsubishis and the Supras, you were doing some checks on the car, make sure that they were running, the compression was good. Like, what do you do now for like these higher end cars? Like, how do you know that they're, you know, someone comes in with a Ferrari and says, hey, I want to trade this in so I could get this other Ferrari? Like, how do you get those cars checked out and making sure that they're legit?
So for the most part, like, we have all like the latest and greatest scan tools that can, you know, check the basics. With all this new technology and all these new cars, it's very hard to like hide a flaw or an issue. You'll usually get a light on the dash or whatever the case is, and then you can kind of further diagnose it from there. Also have built up a good relationship with a tremendous amount of shops in the area, outside of the area. If it's someone in California or someone in somewhere in Florida, you know, we've built up a massive amount of relationships and kind of send them out that way.
Oh, that's cool. So like if you brought in something exotic that you're not aware of, you call up a shop and say, hey, what are some things that I got to look out for? And, you know, I'm taking this car in.
Absolutely.
That's cool.
And I return the favor for a lot of the people in the business that are not in New York.
Yeah. So, you can come over.
I'm their eyes.
Check out, yeah,
hey, I check it out look. For you and you yeah. know, life goes on. And that's how you build, you know, good business, good relationship. It's all about reputation. That's another thing.
100%. That's very important. And I think you have a good grasp of that, which helps you in your business, because you've seen, I mean, I'm sure you know people in an industry that's, you know, started something and they don't last.
Yeah.
There's no longevity in them because either they did bad business or, you know, they had a bad name for themselves where now no one wants to deal with you. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So, you know, for you to be at the top for this long, you obviously have been doing something right. So, you know, kudos to you guys.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. A lot
I think that's very important.
A lot of people see it from like a, you know, in a smaller picture. If you look at it in a bigger picture and follow up after sale, keep in touch with people and just have a good rep. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
Nah, because I you could see like even in your post. So who handles your social media?
So believe it or not, I take all the photos.
Okay.
I handle all the feed work, stories and stuff. I have a few people handling. But
so who's the one making the post? Because your posts are definitely different than outside. It's always, most of them have some type of, you know,
lingo,
lyric to it, or
yeah,
you know, something.
Me.
Something's always like meshes. So that's on you. Then.
That's all me. Yeah. Okay.
And I think to me that definitely helps you sell a car.
100%.
Because it's like, damn, that's my song, yo. Damn, I like that car. All right, hold on. I got to call Adam. I'm going to buy
this
car.
So it's not just about having the best photo or the best car. Like, you also have to, like, interact and you know.
I think you give them a good experience.
Grab their attention. Yeah.
100%. Because I think you put somebody in that mindset. Like, the other day you posted that orange GT3.
The 2RS. Yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry, the 2RS. And there's something behind it, and you read it, it's like, all right, now maybe someone only clicked the first picture, but now because they read the caption, they're like, oh, let me scroll, and that might catch their eye. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So that is something different, definitely, that you do that's different from, you know, a lot of the other.
Yeah, a lot of the other like marketing is
bland,
generic,
it's old school.
Yeah,
just pictures, nice pictures, and that's about it.
Who were any famous people you sold the car to?
Famous people. We just sold a GT3 to a lead guitarist from Papa Roach.
That's cool.
He's pretty famous. I mean, off the top of my head.
Being in, like, you know, the tri-state area, do you deal with any of the sport teams?
I had someone who became a friend of mine. He was playing for the Jets, Vincent Smith. Never did any business with him, but he would always stop by the shop and hang out.
Just check it out.
Yeah. I never really, maybe I didn't really you know what it is with famous people? You can't really target them directly because they're not the ones reaching out to you.
Right.
You kind of have to be in touch or in
with
cahoots
the team
with
or
the
whoever.
Agent
yeah,
who's in
yeah,
charge
yeah.
of them.
The network.
Exactly. Who right. wants a little piece here and a little piece there, and that's just what it is.
Yeah. No, I was just wondering because you are close by. Yeah. There's a lot of, you know, professional sport yeah. teams in our area. So
how about internationally?
Internationally, we sell quite a few vehicles. A lot of cars go. There's been a pretty big market for like Toyotas and Lexuses out in like South Asia.
Oh, wow.
There's, you know, a lot of cars go out to Africa.
Any in like the Middle East?
We've sold a bunch of Supers to Dubai, Bahrain, Qatar.
Did you see that one post of that guy in, I don't know if it's Middle East somewhere, that had the black, a collection of Supras all black?
I haven't seen that, no.
I got I'll forward that when I find it.
Wait, is it the silver ones?
Or sorry, my bad, silver ones.
I think that was a fake
post. Oh, that was fake?
Yeah.
Oh, see? We got duped.
You got.
Yeah, that was a
got.
Fake post.
That's
yeah.
AI right there.
Yeah, that's AI for sure. I've
send me a picture of 100 great
I've
Supras.
Never seen Supras.
I know. I was like
stacked on top of each other without a lift.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's some crazy scams going on right now.
What are they?
So like, I'll give you an example. There's guys like, let's just say you decide to sell your GTR, right?
Yeah.
You'd put it up on Facebook, Car Gurus, wherever you want to put it. And let's say Hugo's the scammer. Hugo will take your photos, take your information, like full
pretend to be
mod
him.
List and whatnot, and put it up for sale. Now, here's where it gets tricky. He puts it up for sale, and I'm the buyer, and somehow I come across his post because it's more attractive to me, the price is better, whatever. I reach out to him, and he's playing the buyer with you. And I said, hey, Hugo, I want that car. I want to do a PPI on the car. So he sets a PPI with you. So you take the car into a PPI. So now let's say you take it into the local Nissan store, and I pay for the PPI. Now, I'm an innocent buyer.
Right.
I think that the car is real because it is. It went
the
through
PPI.
A PPI.
PPI.
Shit's legit. Hugo's giving me his wire information. I send Hugo the wire. He disappears.
Oh, shit.
And life goes on. And it's happened. Like, there's an incident that's going on right now with, you know, a higher end Ferrari.
Wow. That's pretty slick, actually, though.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
is there any other different scams going on? Or is
that's really what I've been hearing. It's been crazy.
No one's ever come to you with like a bag of fake cash or anything like that.
Nah, we don't really accept cash like that.
I'm just saying, just in general, like back in the day, they used to
Hugo
do
got
the
a lot of cash. That's
why wire scams and stuff, you know,
counterfeits
what I mean?
And shit. Yeah, I mean, wires are crazy.
Yeah, I see. I'm like, how the hell you scam a wire? And like, obviously, it happens, you know, or like the fake certified checks.
Fake certified checks,
where like it clears, but then like 2 weeks later, it's like, yo, what happened to this money? It's gone.
Yep.
So, something to be careful about, I guess. But I mean, you guys are professionals now, so you guys deal with that.
What do you think about this new trend of like the car theft now? Like, people like just antenna scanning, copying keys, and then just driving away and like.
So I think it's wild. I think that, I mean, they're probably going to be watching this podcast too. But I think that, you know, the law should kind of penalize these people a lot more than
more
just
a
slap on
the
wrist. And
yeah.
Here you go. Here's a desk appearance ticket. Come back in 3 months and do your. Local whatever cleaning and shit, but
yeah, even like in New Jersey, it's really big now that people are going to the affluent areas and they're breaking in.
Oh yeah, they're breaking into homes.
They're breaking into homes
for keys.
That's how crazy, like to steal a Range Rover or to take some, you know, whatever high end car that you know they think is in the garage, which more likely is.
And it's crazy because they're just selling them for like
pennies.
$2,000, $3,000, $5,000, $10,000, and I'm like. I get it. Like, yeah, it's money, but like, why? Why the fuck would you? Why would you risk?
Well, it's like
your
you
life,
said. There's,
first of all, because a motherfucker stepping into my house, he's getting popped.
But I think it's like you said. It's more of the slap on the wrist thing. You know what I mean? There's no consequences.
There's no consequences.
Yeah.
So the law is like so terrible with that.
Yeah. On that end, for them, it's like, well, if I get caught, I don't care. You know what I mean? It's not the risk is worth it for them. So.
And it's become like a cool thing on social media.
I think so. I mean, for a while, I used to see the, especially like out of Philly, and I mean, we're close by, but I remember.
And then like
a couple months
the
ago,
Jersey boys are competing with like the Wisconsin boys.
Oh, of course, yeah. And it's like, oh, Hellcats, you know, I got that Hawk for sale. You know the deal, 5,000. It's like, wait, 5,000? But you know, they ain't have no, you know, they're all stolen, and it's crazy. But it is definitely becoming a thing, and I think, like you said. Until something happens with them.
It's kind of like back in the 80s. I mean, I wasn't alive for that, but, you know, in the 80s, it was very common for cars to be stolen.
Like New Jersey Drive?
Yeah.
Grand Nationals and
yeah,
Cadillacs and
Corvettes. Back in the day, my parents, so this was 70s, my parents told me that, and so people were stealing gas.
Siphoning
out of the car. So what every car, like they were selling these at the car, you would buy a gas cap with a lock on it. And you would have to use a key to unlock it because people were just stealing gas back in the day. This is like...
So I've got a friend of mine who lives in South Jersey who actually thought of a pretty cool idea. He's got a few extra dollars to spend and he doesn't give a fuck. But I don't know if he's going to do it or not. But there were several times where they've tried to break into his house. And I think they got in once or twice, but they didn't manage to get the cars. So what he wants to do is... buy like a higher end looking BMW for cheap, you know, $15,000-$20,000. And he wants to disconnect the interior door handle.
Like a bait car.
Exactly.
So you can't
get
out.
By the way, is illegal because he could go to jail for it, but he just wants to catch the motherfuckers. So you get inside and now you can't fucking open the door. What do you do then?
Oh man.
Oh, that's a good one.
That'd be funny.
Let us know if that happens. I want to see the video. So getting back to used cars, you know, is there anything that you would have done differently in the past 12 years?
Honestly, I have no regrets. I know that there could have been shortcuts that may have sunk me or may have gotten me further. But I feel like I've earned everything I have today. And, you know, I truly wouldn't change anything.
And what advice would you give to someone watching that potentially wanted to start some type of like used car sale or, you know, try to get into that, you know, flipping market of cars? What would be your best piece of advice for them?
truthfully, is to, you know, love what you do, love the cars, love the people, and just stay super dedicated. If it doesn't work today, it might work tomorrow, but just have to keep going at
it's
it.
It's a grind. You can't. It's a not grind. Overnight.
There's no giving up. You got to be 200%, not 100, not 50, 200% all the time.
And so on the flip side, though, what's probably like, if you could think of one thing that stands out to you about like being in the used car industry that like would not make you want to do this? So what would that be?
So for now, I'm cool. But I definitely see that like it's very hard to satisfy everybody. People will burn you the fuck out. And I'm not like not on any specific incident, but just like
in general,
dude.
Dealing with different personalities.
Like, yeah, man. Like, yeah. I sell you a car, you drive out of here, you catch a nail in your tire and you get a tire pressure light on. Dude, that's kind of on you. Like, I'll help you out and I'll guide you to the nearest tire shop, but you're calling me to complain that the tire light's on. I mean,
it can happen on a brand new car. It wasn't on when you left.
Right. Like, people will burn you out.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's, you know, maybe it's because I'm super emotional about what I do and how much I love my cars and how much I, you know, give it my all, but that's one thing that I kind of see burning me out down the line. But for now, we're good.
Do you have, so right now it's, is there anyone else in the family that helps you out, or is it just you and your brother?
So it's me and my brother. And we have a staff of three other people right now, which we plan to add some more. And again, very thankful for my staff. Without them, I wouldn't be here today. We've built a great team. We're very family oriented. You coming into the shop is like coming into someone's house, you know. Food's always on the table. We always break bread together, and you know that's what differentiates us from like the, you know, new car stores or the used car stores. We're a family.
So what's in the future for Brooklyn Auto Sales?
Definitely looking to expand. Definitely looking to expand within means, not above our means. I think in the next year or so we should have some good news.
Awesome. Well, Adam, man, I think that wraps it up. We thank you for coming out.
No, thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Give everybody, drop your social so that everyone can follow. We got Brooklyn Auto Sales, but it's underscore,
Brooklyn,
right?
_auto_sales.
Okay, so you can follow him on Instagram and on Facebook.
It's Brooklyn Auto Sales.
Okay, anything else?
TikTok? You know,
TikToks or anything?
Doing the TikTok?
We'll start getting into the TikTok, but that's also Brooklyn Auto Sales. Okay. We have it. We have a few videos uploaded, but looking to hire a social media guy in the Staten Island area here soon.
Okay.
All right. So, awesome. Yeah, if you guys are social media guys, he's looking for someone. So keep, you know, hit him up. Well, that wraps up the Eat, Sleep, Race podcast. Make sure you follow me, Frankie5ESR, on Instagram. We got HugoESR. If you love this podcast, please make sure you like, subscribe, and we'll see you at the next one.